So greetings from Canada. We had the UK. Now we have another Commonwealth representative. I live in Vancouver. I've worked my whole career in Vancouver and Los Angeles, probably 90% on American projects. My name's Curtis Staples, I'm sorry. I manage and owned post facilities, DI houses, and so on. And I'm an advisor to Think Logical, media and entertainment advisor to Think Logical, who have a product line that bridges a number of verticals by nature of what it is. And if you don't know the company already, you'll see what I mean pretty quickly. We came up with a nice, tight, crisp title for our session. Basically, what would happen, or what would it take if we behaved like a military branch or an intelligence government body? This is the abridged version. So this is a representative slide of selected customers who use Think Logical. And this is not meant to be a sales pitch, this is really just to give context. Think Logical solutions. One way to think about them, they're basically getting signals from one place to another. If you're drawing, if you work in the business and you've been at the whiteboard and you're drawing boxes and circles and connecting them with arrows, this is the company that's all the arrows in your drawing. They also work with these guys. And they're pretty much all represented there. There's a lot of eagles and thunderbolts and spearheads up there. It's everything from the CIA, NSA, Strategic Command, underground in Nebraska, the folks underground in Colorado, it's NORAD, NATO, NASA, foreign governments. Oh, Canadian flag. It's always a little bigger. There we go. So we got that's Denmark on the Denmark on the far left, and then the two flags look very similar. The one on the here's maybe you can remember now seeing them together. The one on the far right is Australia. The one that looks similar is New Zealand. The big star on the Australian flag, they're both Southern Crosses, and the big star on the Australian flag represents the Commonwealth. That's what that means, FYI. So these guys have extreme expectations. This is a control room for ESPN, Southeast Conference college football. Doesn't look a lot different, other than the uniforms, to this room. By the way, all those screens are black, because when the photographer walked in, who does not have the correct level of security clearance, all the screens went black. And you'll notice network television and weather forecasts are on the wall. Trust me, that's not what was on the wall before the photographer walked in the room. Here's a VFX house, typical VFX studio layout. Here's a VFX layout, except I think this is NATO, somewhere secret, making big decisions. This is the types of facilities on both ends of the spectrum that Think Logical is taking care of. So, in the military world, intelligence sector, they're collecting information from wherever they can get their hands on it. It's being processed, talked about, modified. They're filtering the data. They're comparing all kinds of things, looking for patterns. It's analyzed, and ultimately they have to make a decision that's disseminated for an action. We do that. We collect stuff. We process it, analyze it. We disseminate it. We have different words for those things. We shoot, we capture, animate, render, etc. We review, approve, we QC, and then we have to send it out somewhere. These guys, stuff's coming in from everywhere, as you can imagine. And they have different levels of security. There's top secret. These are the actual terms, not my terms. There's top secret, there's secret, which is, I guess, less secret than top secret. There's confidential. We know what that is. It's on all the contracts we sign. And then there's unclassified. The top three are various levels of classified, and then there's unclassified. Now, these guys are obviously lightweights, because in our business, we know everything's top secret. This is what they're doing in general with respect to the data they collect and hold and process and make decisions on, is they're protecting classified information. We, on the other hand, we're doing this. We're collecting or protecting our assets. They have a set of a rule book, which is probably what our rule book is going to look like in CDSA land down the road. It's called the Information Assurance Directives, which is a backwards, kind of an, for me, an inverted way of saying we need to assure that the information we have is safe. And they have directives to maintain that that is the case. It all starts here: a computer, a workstation, keyboard, mouse, and display, and the device. In their world, the information assurance directives say those things can't be closer than a meter. Why? Because they radiate RF signals and electromagnetic patterns that if you have a computer that anybody can perhaps gain access to inside the operation, then there's a chance they could gain access to classified information. I should have said at the beginning, one thing about the military and intelligence community, and they make no apologies for this. They don't trust anybody. Everybody who works there is a threat. Every single human being is a threat. And I believe we're heading in that direction here. If you've got people working in a building and there's a movie down the hall, it was said by the previous speaker, it's only a matter of time. So this is what's dictated. Now, these guys, here's some guys. You can see what they do for a living, but clearly there's a problem, and I should say what's a problem, because this is an old photograph. They have four computers inside 30 inches. This does not pass the directives. Cables that come out of the box with these things allow you to get them at least this far apart. So you couldn't set them up like this out of the box. You could follow the directions, you can do this. The only problem is, the operator's desk is 10 to 15 feet long. They need rails for their chair. They can't talk to anybody else because the desk, this sounds absurd. But these are the kinds of issues that they were faced with. And worst of all, the information, i.e. content data, is with the user. Everybody is a threat. And we know in our business that stuff is all top secret. This is what we want. We just want a bunch of displays. We want the computer somewhere else. We don't want anybody to be able to see them. We need to get the computers out of the room. But if we only get them out of the room, we still have this issue. Still exists in every facility. Again, these are third-party houses, studios that are entrusted with somebody else's content. And this guy here, every single one of those, somewhere in that building, there's a place for me to put one of these. This might be an eye-opener for you. This is a 2 terabyte USB flash drive. 2 terabytes. And they gave it a really interesting name. It's called the Predator. Just like that is called the Predator. This is not our, it's not a friendly environment for us. So what fits on a 2 terabyte USB flash drive? This is interesting. That format, the first format I put up there, that's what you can send out to any network to have QC'd and put on the air. That thing right there. You can put 13 two-hour movies on that little pocket device, and the time to put each movie on there will take you 2 minutes. You can go uncompressed, HD, you can get 8 titles, transfer them in 3. You can go to UHD, 422, get 3 of them on there, and you can even get 2 uncompressed, ultra-high def feature films of 2 hours in length, which is a long movie. They're 100 minutes long, and you can get even more, and it'll take you 12 minutes per film to get them on that device. So even though we can extend beyond the cables that come out of the box, and we can use all kinds of other solutions, including the ones that ThinkLogical sells as well as its competitors and other approaches using Ethernet solutions and so on, and we can get up to about 150 meters, you're still in the building. And we got to get, not just out of the room, we got to get this stuff out of the building. We got to get it here. How do we do that? And this is not how ThinkLogical does it, this is how everybody does it. We have a transmitter at the remote end. We have a cable that's doing, moving the signal one way or the other. The receiver at the other end that's also taking the input information from keyboard, mouse, and sending that back to where the computer is. It's processing away. And then what we do is we just send the pixels to the screen that the user's using. So there's no computer, there's no video card, there's no content in the facility. There's just a sequence, a waterfall of pixels coming to my screen that are only there while I'm looking at them, and that's what I see. Now, the downside with most of these, almost all of these solutions at distance, if you're within the facility, if you're using these solutions within a big facility, you know, it's got 500 employees or 50 or whatever, and it covers an acre, it covers 1,000 square feet, some of these, you can get by with some of these issues that surround these things. But you're almost always dealing with compression of some kind. So you're not seeing the real picture. You're seeing, even if it's 2-to-1 compression, as they call it lossy compression, and it's visibly the same, visually lossless. But the fact of the matter is, these 12 million pixels in the source are not represented by 12 million identical pixels over here. And there's a bunch of stuff we do in movie business where they need to be the same. You can't master a feature film knowing that half of what you're looking at is not the real RGB value of each pixel. So you've got compression issues. You've got latency. Now, within a building, the latency is nominal. It's to the point where it's imperceptible, even by the most finely tuned artist on a tablet or mouse. This type of solution using PC over IP works very well with anything that any activity in our business that can be executed with a proxy, like editing. There's a company I do business with called Bebop, who have an ingenious platform that runs in AWS and I believe Google now, and Azure eventually. And so it's a PaaS, it's a platform as a service, on which you can stand up applications. And as a result of that, I could log in from an airport and cut on an Avid or Premiere Pro in the airport, call it my session from anywhere, collaborate with another editor in a different city, close it, get on my plane. In other words, I'm just moving that edit room wherever I need to go because the heavy lifting of the edit room is in AWS. My picture's a proxy, just like it's always been. At one point, my picture came from a half-inch VHS, came from a 3/4 inch, came from something else. So, and the latency is under 50 milliseconds. So, you know, when I'm doing my job as an editor, I'm not aware of the latency. But in this world, that doesn't cut it. It's got to be the real picture. You can't compress a satellite image and then make a decision on that. It's got to be what it is. Sorry, Canadian flag, too big again. So what we want, what we really want to fill in a blank for us is we've got the lower two-thirds of the pyramid, qualitatively, we've got that covered with all the other solutions that are out there. But in terms of 4K masters, uncompressed, dual channel, or HD, or whatever, but the thing that came from the camera, maybe it was converted to a different format, but it's still the master file, that's the pointy end of the pyramid that we haven't addressed, and that's the stuff that's sitting around in third-party facilities everywhere where human beings work, where every single one of them has multiple points of access that you know, human beings who make mistakes can gain access to. Or, worst of all, somewhere in those machines, one way or the other, they're connected to the internet. And sitting there is a 6K master of something that's going to be down converted to 4K to then from there make IMS to go to theaters and so on. So we want no compression. We want no latency. We want no drop frames, no artifacts, no mouse jitter. We want it to feel like we're pushing play and it's the master right now in this room. And that's what these guys have. This is how they do their jobs. And being the military and the intelligence community, they don't just want to do it across the alley or down the block. They want something that's meaningful so that they can separate those two facilities a reasonable distance. So think logical as technology where, you know, you can get that kind of performance 80 kilometers in Canada and 50 miles in the United States. So here you are, your devices and your computers and your store or your master files and so on are in a data center. It's a secure data center. You can move the images that far. What is being delivered? What can we get that far? Well, it's uncompressed 4K DCI. It's 444 chroma subsampling, 30 bits per color depth, per pixel color depth, and it's up to 60 frames per second. So it can be 24, it can be 30, it can be 48, it can be 60. But beyond that, it's two of those on a single fiber, which for the military is really handy because that's a good way to train fighter pilots. But in our world, we have this thing called VR360 that needs this. It needs 60 frames a second, it needs two channels, and so on. So it's there, it exists, and you know there are ways that we can utilize this for our purposes and get that stuff out of the building. Now it's out of the building. In their world, they have multiple classifications. Remember, we had top secret and so on. We'll go through that in a second. You want to be able to switch between your different projects back to your facility. So you've got all of these devices are in the same. I'm gonna make a shout. All the devices are in the same location, and in their world, they've got, as I said, multiple classifications. They can run through a single switch, and they can switch any to any. These matrix switches are available anywhere from 16 by 16. Think of them as giant, you know, three-dimensional intersections, all the way up to an obscene thing that you know has only a few clients in the world, which is a 640 by 60, 640, fiber optic router. And there are a few places where multiples of those have gone in, which is a remarkable thing to think about. Going to anything, and they switch according to the security level. And again, in our case, everything's top secret because one thing might be Avatar 2, and the next one is Pirates of the Caribbean 9 and Mission Impossible 13. And not everybody should see that stuff. Not everybody should be aware of it. Here's our U.S. Army VFX artist. They're diversifying. We have a new competitor you guys didn't know was coming, working at the U.S. Army VFX and DI facility. And this person is able to change what's on the screens in a heartbeat to nothing, to something else. Well, we could use that just simply for protecting specific content on this title that we're working with only these people on, who leave and then someone comes in and then it's other material from something else on another project. We're not very good at that. And everybody's carrying these. And, you know, if we thought about this as though these were national secrets, we wouldn't behave the way we behave. And it's, I believe that it's only a matter of time, and it's going to be one waterfall moment after another cascading. And as ridiculous as some of these things may sound to our business, we'll be doing all of them in 5 to 10 years, maybe less. Now, this does not happen in those environments I show you, you know, with the Army or the CIA or NASA, and that is, looks like this guy's, like our people do, is maybe doing an email. And does that email have attachments? Do you realize how this is something to consider, is, you know, the reality of encrypted emails, encrypted attachments? Do you realize I've worked on feature films where important metadata, as part of the workflow, changed hands between multiple people every day for 18 months. These are like nine-figure budget feature films, as attachments and emails. And then something really important somebody needed is like, oh, when did you send me that? Is that before I went on holiday? I mean, and I'm like, what? This LUT that we absolutely need, or this whatever we need, is an attachment on an email, and you don't know when you sent it, and the only way you can find it is to find, did you clean your archive? Oh yeah, that's right, I cleaned my archive. Maybe the guy I sent it to still has it. And why so many attachments to emails? And when you consider how it's exposing so much metadata, and in fact, a lot of cases, the metadata is, and God knows, all of us that read the news are aware of, metadata includes contracts. Oh, so I'm doing this $500 million movie, and here's the contract for so-and-so, attach, send, Outlook. Somebody else mentioned Outlook. Every day, thousands of times, it's really got to stop because it's going to end the life for companies. What we need, and this is a pet project of mine, or pet peeve and passion project, whatever, however you want to describe it, we need a place for our stuff. Nobody's built encrypted lockers for us to put those little things in, so we're not doing the natural thing, which is attaching it and emailing it. It needs to go somewhere, like a locker in a bus station, where I can call you and give you the combination, and you can go and open that locker and get that thing. That's what we need, and it needs to be tied to the workflow. So it needs to be plugged into places in the workflow. It needs to be plugged into the users, so that if I'm a DID on set, I have access to this part of it, but not the rest downstream. But if I'm a final colorist, I can. If we're talking about color information, I can go back in the food chain, find these things, and it needs to be integrated into the software tools we use, so it's there as a plug-in, it's got an icon on the screen, and I can do what I need to do. Only then will attachments to emails end. This has to be so easy and so transparent that there's just no reason a human being won't do it. In other words, it makes their life a better place, and they are more likely to make use of it at that time. Final thing to consider with respect to our world. This sounds out there. It's not out there. It's here. Distributed encrypted storage. I'll describe in more detail what that is. A metaphoric way or thought experiment way to talk about this is when we encrypt, we're taking something that is complete and it has order, so it's complete order, and we're making complete chaos, which sounds like a great idea, except the word complete is still there. There is another option that we can add to that mix, which is not only do we make chaos out of order, but we make incompleteness out of completeness. So what distributed encrypted storage is that here's the file, blow it up into 100,000 bits, encrypt those bits and put them in 100,000 locations, or put them in 1,000 locations. Now, the thing that will be at the foundation of this will be blockchain. I found it interesting in our program today, I thought, oh, maybe I missed it. So I went on the site, and this is a criticism of the event, but it was just interesting because we're all going to see this change. I went on the site for the event, and then it's like, you know, find on page. So I went to the program, find on page, blockchain, not a single hit. That will not be the case next year. I took a wander through the lobby at lunch. I heard a guy on the phone arguing with somebody, and he was talking about the supply chain for pot pies. I'm not kidding. And what was he talking about? He was talking about auditing the security of the meat supply using blockchain to make pot pies. So it's coming for us. It's very early days for this. One example that'll maybe make your eyes roll, and you'll figure out immediately what it is when I say the name of it, is Filecoin. Filecoin is a cryptocurrency that's not tied to people aimlessly processing algorithms, burning electricity, and ending up with cryptocurrency based on how much electricity they burn to make the coin. It's based on the owners of storage, which one day could be you with your laptop, and how efficiently you can store and serve up data as required, and you will earn file coins for that. All that data is blown up into thousands of bits and then encrypted and stored all over the place, and then they're all brought together through blockchain to be delivered. So that sounds pie in the sky and insane, but I just learned 2 weeks ago that a facility in Vancouver is putting in dozens of petabytes of storage, and it's going to be the alpha test, beta test, and ongoing iteration facility for FilePoint. That'll be in Vancouver, so, you know, maybe if I can, I'll learn more about that and can report back one day. So let's review. Get all the computing out of the building. Get all the data out of the building. So now everybody gets to see the picture. They can color correct it, they can edit it, they can add titles, they can talk to their friends about it, they can look at performances of actors, but none of that stuff is in the building. Put all your proxy content, the stuff that you need to review and approve performances, composites of shots, you can edit with it, stuff that it's okay that you don't have the master. You can put all that in a public cloud, it's stored all over the country, and it's as long as it's not connected, as long as it's not connected to the internet in your configuration that you set up, you're fine. Move all the master content into a private cloud. Use a solution like ThinkLogicals that'll deliver you two channels of what you need to do your job. By the way, those systems are not connected to the internet. You gotta get in, you gotta have the right fingerprint and iris to get in the building. You gotta have a key to get into the cage. You got to be able to disconnect the fiber and connect it up to something else without setting off an alarm. I mean, these are not things that you can actually do. You know, if the light stops flashing in the fiber, it stops flashing in the fiber. Consider encrypted email. Cut down on to almost zero if you can. The use of attachments in email for content, whether that's metadata or program content. Lots of people do like little clips of little scenes or stuff. And hey, what do you think about this? Or these two shots? What do you like? I mean, it's an actor reaction or the delivery of a line. That thing's going to happen on the internet. You know, promote the concept. Anybody, if you know anybody that develops software for our industry, talk about the idea of a place to put our stuff. George Carlin has a great routine. You know, we all need a place for our stuff. And we don't have enough places for our stuff, and that's why we're using shortcuts right now. And spend some time reading those boring articles that you come across in Inc. or Fast Company or Wired. Take some time to read those and begin to understand it, because it's coming, and our whole industry at some point will be anchored on that technology. And thank you. Oh, yeah. Thank you for your time. Yes?
A quick question. I mean, obviously every hour there are hundreds of hard drives flying around the city or around the world because our creators...
They're in the trunks of Chevettes being driven by college students.
Couriers, you know, because they're concerned about security and quality. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, when you run the parallels between federal or versus commercial, what have you, to what degree would you say the government or the federal... DOD, what have you, have a solution
have hard
for this
drives
issue.
In trunks of cars?
No, have solutions for this issue. I mean, where is the maturity level when you compare industries of federal versus entertainment?
So these, if you're talking about the military, Strategic Command, the Army, Naval Intelligence, Air Force, CIA, NSA, they've got it.
They've solved it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, because as absurd as it sounds, well, you go into these facilities and... this is not on the wall, but trust no one is, that's the theme. That's no one. Trust no one. And the other thing that's on, but this is actually on the wall. In some places it's like 50 feet long down the wall. It says failure is not an option. And so, so it's not a movie, it's not going to a theater, and it's, do I push this button or not? Do I send 5 airplanes with these missiles to that location? Do I do something right now? I have to do it now. I can't do it in 5 seconds because the computer's saying in 5 seconds it'll be too late. So, like, nothing can interfere with that. And so, the thought experiment is, what would be wrong with us thinking that way? Because I would say 3/4 of what we heard today is because there's access to the content. again, with George Carlin, I loved what he said about exercise. No pain. No pain. So we got to take. We've got to say, look, if we don't want access, then no access, no access. Anybody have any other questions? And I'll yield the floor to the next group. Good. Thank you very much.